Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, August 19th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Coeur d'Alene tribe trying Chinook salmon recovery in Spokane River. Changes in Idaho public defender system. Local judges will no longer assign public defenders and counties no longer have to pay. Spokane ups enforcement of sidewalk blocking law. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Spokane police ramped up enforcement of the city's pedestrian interference law earlier this year as a way of targeting homeless people during the 50th anniversary of Expo 74. Police officials say the pedestrian interference law provided officers with more flexibility when dealing with homeless people while the city was waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to give clarity to the city's new law against camping, sitting, or lying on sidewalks or public property anywhere within 1,000 feet of a school, park, or daycare. Spokane Police Department spokesperson Julie Humphreys told the Inlander, pedestrian interference kind of took over during that time when we were waiting for Proposition 1 to be cleared up by the courts. We have a lot of people that are blocking areas. They might not be camping, but they might have a shopping cart full of all kinds of their belongings. We do get regular complaints that people can't pass by. In late June, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that cities that enforce anti-camping or sit-lie laws when there is not enough room for the homeless in shelters do not constitute cruel and unusual punishment. The High Court ruling reversed an earlier Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling in Boise versus Martin. The ruling meant cities like Spokane, with its new anti-camping ordinance, no longer have to be concerned whether it's unconstitutional. Humphrey said Spokane police are beginning to enforce the city's new anti-camping ordinance, but enforcement of the sidewalk blocking law has remained high because she said police needed about a month to be trained on enforcing the new city law. Spokane's sit-lie law only applies to sitting and lying on downtown sidewalks between 6 a.m. and midnight when shelter space is not available. The pedestrian interference law applies to people who might be walking, standing, or placing an object in an obstructive manner citywide and 24 hours a day. It also prohibits aggressive panhandling and interfering with vehicular traffic. Speaking of the pedestrian interference law, Humphrey said, "It is easier for officers to enforce. We can take action on pedestrian interference without having to look for required shelter space." The pedestrian interference law carries a penalty of up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. Humphreys said typically a citation is referred to community court where people can be connected to support services and avoid fines and jail time. ACLU of Washington Policy Program Director Jamin Clark told the Inlander, "The pedestrian interference law technically applies to everyone, but police overwhelmingly use it against people who are homeless." Clark said it's a real issue, particularly when it is enforced in lieu of anti-camping or sit-lie. Because it doesn't have the same time and place parameters as sit and lie, it can be used more broadly. I think that it can be a very convenient workaround for law enforcement. The ACLU of Washington filed a lawsuit against the city of Spokane this month, saying three of the city's anti-homeless laws violate the state constitution's protections of due process and against cruel punishment. The new camping ordinance, for example, gives police authority to confiscate people's belongings when clearing camps. The ACLU lawsuit says the laws criminalize the very existence of the homeless in Spokane. U.S. Attorney for Idaho Josh Hurwit met with U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland and U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar to discuss strategies for combating the fentanyl crisis in the state. Attorney General Garland said the officials are working on a collaborative partnership between local and federal law enforcement to find strategies for combating fentanyl and crimes in general. There was a 15% drop in murders in Idaho in 2023 compared to 2022. Garland said nationally the murder rate has declined, and last year's violent crime rate was the lowest in 50 years and marked the largest decline in homicides in 50 years. The Idaho Press reported fentanyl was a major focus of the meeting in the Boise area. Data from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare show Idaho experienced 188 reported fentanyl-related deaths in 2022. Nampa Police Department Chief Joe Huff cited concern with the influx of drugs, especially fentanyl from Mexico. Ada County Sheriff Matt Clifford also highlighted the fentanyl issue in Idaho and across the nation. The Attorney General informed officers of efforts with China and Mexico's governments to curtail the flow of precursor chemicals. Both Huff and Clifford said they left the meeting with positive impressions and said they were pleasantly surprised. The number of children in Washington's foster care system has dropped by half since the creation of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families in 2017. Children, Youth, and Families Department Advocate Patrick Dowd said the agency's approach is to provide support services to families and reduce the risk of harm instead of separating families. Support services include child care, family therapy, substance abuse treatment, domestic violence services, and material assistance such as diapers and car seats. The Washington State Standard reports the reduction contrasts with the number of child abuse and neglect reports severe enough to require face-to-face responses, which has remained steady since the department's founding. Dowd acknowledged concerns the initiative to keep families together could leave some children in at-risk situations, but said there has been success in similar programs in other states. The Keeping Families Together Act in 2023 ended homelessness, disability, and poverty as sole reasons for removing a child from a family in Washington. The department aims to reduce racial disparities. Native black and white children are more likely to be removed from the home than Asian and Hispanic children. While the risk to black and white children has somewhat decreased since 2017, Native children are now at a greater risk. There was an increase in annual deaths and critical incidents where children are victims between 2019 and 2023. The number went from 77 in 2019 to 149 in 2023. The department largely attributes that to the fentanyl epidemic. Washington lawmakers now require courts to give great weight to the presence of opioids in the home when considering taking a child into foster care. The Coeur d'Alene tribe released 150 Chinook salmon into the Spokane River Friday as part of a reintroduction project. It was the third batch this year from the Entiat Fish Hatchery. The Coeur d'Alene tribe and the Spokane tribe signed a 20-year agreement with the Bonneville Power Administration last year to explore Chinook reintroduction in the Spokane River. The Bonneville Power Administration has given the tribes $200 million for the work. Coeur d'Alene Tribe Vice Chair Gene Hameen James told the Spokesman Review, "The ultimate goal is, as a tribal leader and a father, that my grandkids or great-grandkids can stand on the banks of the Spokane River and catch a fish. A majority of the interaction we had with our neighboring tribes was during the salmon runs. We would get together after a long winter knowing that we were going to refill our food banks. We were going to get the certain ceremonies that are done at that time of the season. We were going to see relatives that we didn't get to see, get to make marriages, political deals." Salmon cannot go to the ocean from the Spokane River because the Grand Coulee Dam, which has no fish ladders, blocks their way. Speaking of the dams in the Columbia River system, Coeur d'Alene Tribe Freshwater Spawning Fish Division Chief Thomas Bilodeau said, "The idea with this study is to figure out how we can get salmon back into these areas while maintaining the benefits that those projects provide." The fish the tribe released Friday are expected to spawn in about a month. Tribal Vice Chair James said, "We want to see our rivers get healthy again. We want to see the riparian zones get healthy again. We want to see the birds of prey get healthy again and be whole, which they, along with us, can't be until these fish are returned." The Idaho Fish and Game Commission Thursday approved a new rule requiring bear hunters to pass a test to show they distinguish between a black bear and a grizzly bear. The new rules will take effect January 1st. The commission also approved a new rule that requires bear hunters to notify the Fish and Game Department if a grizzly bear visits one of their baiting sites and remove the bait site for the remainder of the season if one does. That rule will take effect September 1st. Since grizzly bears are threatened under the Endangered Species Act, they cannot be hunted. Wild Earth Guardians, the Western Watersheds Project, the Moscow-based Friends of the Clearwater, and Wilderness Watch recently filed a 60-day notice of intent to sue the state because black bear baiting is exposing grizzlies to accidental killing and conditioning them to human food. The commission's new rules are intended to head off the lawsuit. The state of Idaho has filed a request with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to remove grizzly bears from the threatened species list under the Endangered Species Act, but the federal government requires states to show they have regulations to conserve the species in place before they will delist a species. Western Watersheds Project Idaho Director Greg Ladon told the Lewiston Tribune the new rules are not enough. Ladon said, "I think it still creates conflict where grizzly bears are going to come across bait sites and for grizzly bears to be habituated to human food." Idaho Wildlife Federation Conservation Coordinator Garrett Visser told the paper his group, which is a coalition of hunting and fishing groups, will monitor how the rules work. Visser said, "We are going to look at how things go, and if there is an opportunity for additional rulemaking and tweaks, we will be engaged in that." In other news concerning Idaho Fish and Game, the agency announced last week a white-tailed deer near Bonner's Ferry tested positive for chronic wasting disease, which is highly contagious and always fatal in deer, elk, and moose. The Idaho Fish and Game Commission voted Thursday to approve a special hunt near Bonner's Ferry to help determine the prevalence of chronic wasting disease in the northern panhandle. And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
A new report finds pollution violations at wastewater treatment plants have been a problem in more than half of Idaho's communities. The Idaho Conservation League's annual study of the state's sewage treatment plants says 58% violated Clean Water Act standards during 2023. Will Tiedemann with the Idaho Conservation League says his organization didn't find much change between 2022 and 2023.
It's kind of the status quo has continued from last year. There are still a significant number of facilities across Idaho who violate. And of that, you know, it's usually 10, 11, 12 facilities who make up the lion's share of that.
Tiedemann says his organization continues to study not just violations, but loads over limits, or the severity of the violation. Three facilities in Driggs, Parma, and Preston accounted for about a third of total violations. On the positive side, 47 cities and towns did not report any violations in 2023. Tiedemann says violations typically occur because of elevated levels of phosphorus or nitrogen from an excess of nutrients. He notes that excess nutrients can create problems for water bodies, such as algae blooms.
There are real-world consequences for the environment and for recreation and for human health.
Tiedemann says violations occur more often in smaller communities, and there's a reason for that.
Large cities in Idaho have a tax base to where they can have more advanced treatment systems. They have more things to treat, but they kind of have an outsized availability of resources to address that. But lots of smaller towns in Idaho don't always. They have limited budgets.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The state of Idaho will take over funding and management of the state's public defender system starting October 1st. The legislature has allocated $57 million for the program, and if the new state program spends more than that, then they can ask the legislature for more money. Until now, counties were responsible, and county commissioners allocated the budget for public defenders in each judicial district. Under the new system, public defenders will no longer be paid a base rate. The newly created state office of the public defender will assign public attorneys and pay them $100 an hour or $150 an hour for capital cases. Governor Brad Little appointed Eric Fredrickson as state public defender. The contracts will only be assigned to individual lawyers and not law firms. Attorneys who want to work as public defenders must sign contracts with the state. Public defender Lawrence Moran told the Lewiston Tribune the new contracts are problematic because before, public defenders knew how much money they were going to make in a month, but now that money will be variable because they are paid by the hour and they don't know how many hours they're going to work in a month. One block of East 6th Street between South Washington and South Jefferson Streets in Moscow is closed to vehicular and pedestrian traffic for a sewer main replacement. Crews are installing an 8-inch sanitary sewer pipe between East 5th and East 8th Streets, closing the arterial to vehicular and pedestrian traffic. Drivers and pedestrians can expect detours around the construction area. East 5th Street is also closed between Washington and Jefferson Street, and the steep section of East 7th Street is expected to be closed during the construction as well. City staff engineer Bob Bouvel wrote on the city's website, "Americans with disabilities access is a top priority for the city, and if the project or any other project in the city impacts disability access to public services, people can call or email the city. The phone number is 208-883-7600. That's 208-883-7600. And there is an email address for accessibility issues on the city website. Much of the work is in the alley just east of Washington Street. Crews should finish the sewer replacement project sometime this fall. The Moscow City Council will hold a public hearing tonight to adopt an open budget ordinance for the fiscal year 2024, which ends on September 30th. Idaho law provides a process to amend their original fiscal year budget. The agenda item says during the fiscal year end, it was determined that two major operating funds, the general fund and the sanitation fund, accumulated unanticipated and unappropriated fund balances. The city also received an unanticipated federal grant during the fiscal year. Staff has proposed amending the budget ordinance by $2.51 million to accommodate for unappropriated balances and council authorized grant revenue and net expenditures. The consent agenda of tonight's meeting includes a one-year extension of the lease agreement with the Latah County Library District for use of the city-owned library building at 110 South Jefferson Street and approval of an updated interagency and interstate agreement with the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee. The Moscow City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight tonight. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 52. West winds 5 to 10, becoming calm in the evening, gusts up to 20. Increasing clouds tomorrow, high 77. West winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20. 30% chance of showers, mainly between 8 p.m. and midnight Tuesday night. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 50. And a 30% chance of showers before noon on Wednesday. Mostly sunny, otherwise high 73. Currently 79 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz and Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by C.F. Morrison Guitars at 130 North Grand Avenue in Pullman, providing lessons, repairs, and handmade acoustic and classical guitars. Open Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. Details at cfmorrisonguitars.com. KRFP thanks its donors and sponsors.